Tip turns 20.
Yeah, it's amazing, eh? Like, we've had a lot of experiences, and we try our best to enjoy them all. So it's been a pretty crazy whirlwind of life, though, so far at this point. 20 years since the beginning of Finger 11, which doesn't even go back to the beginning of the band, really.
Exactly.
You know, if you know the band's history, like, we've... You know, the older we get, the more we realize, like, we pretty much started this band in, like, middle school, you know? We didn't know it then, but we were all jamming together one way or another since we've been around 13 years old, you know?
Which would mean, you know, you're at least 30 years.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. It's been the number one focus of most of our lives, you know? It's been everything. And it's pretty neat to sort of be here with the same guys, you know? This is really cool, man. Like, we're still, like, best friends, and we've had a really good run. So, you know, it's really inspiring still at the end of this many years. Like, on paper, it sounds like a way too long of a time to be a band, you know what I mean? But in reality... Every day, it still feels exciting and fun to be in Finger 11, so it's cool.
Well, I mean, if you put it in the contrast of most relationships of today, I mean, that is a lifetime, because if anybody in a relationship, a marriage or otherwise, gets beyond 5 years, it's like, wow, good for you.
Yeah, for real, you know, and we're fortunate, man. We try to take advantage of it as much as we can, you know. Making new music still, we just were in the studio with Arnold Lanny and put a song down, which is something really special and cool. So it's fun.
A song, you say, for an album, or are you guys doing something again for a soundtrack?
You know what? There is no real, at this point, it was just more to get in a studio with Arnold and see if we're constantly writing, and we're obviously going to put new music out. In what form? I don't know if it's going to be a record or if it's going to be song by song or if it's going to be an EP. Like, you know, we'll just, now, with all the options, it's fun. You can sort of decide when the music's made, how much you have, and how you want to present it.
You made mention to how you distribute your music now and how the landscape of how we receive it has changed. Do you find it harder now? Has it been an adjustment period since you guys first get in to have to, you know, to, I mean, it basically make that dollar? Because, again, it's totally changed the landscape of how, you know, bands used to make albums, go on tours, sell their merch, and now it's like piecemeal almost.
Yeah, it's so new. The changes are so, like, you know, it's like a bomb went off and everybody's got, like, there's no real, nothing's like fully put back together yet, you know what I mean? So it's so early to tell what is a pro and a con to the changes. But I can say, you know, there's two ways to come at it. And one is as the band member, and then the other is as a music fan. You know, as a music fan, it's an amazing time because there's so much access to all this music. But at the same time, as a music fan, I find it overwhelming now.
Right.
It's almost like I don't know where to start, so I've withdrawn into my own favorites, you know? And that's not how I used to do it when I would go to a CD store. I'd always be exploring for new music. So there's a bit of an overwhelmingness. And so as a band, trying to get people to notice, you know, like it used to be, hey, please buy our music. Now it's like, please click the button as you scroll by it, you know,
right,
and notice it a bit. You know, like it's just, there's so much to compete with, which it's not a bad thing. I think ultimately, what we've experienced personally is that ultimately this just really puts pressure on the musicians to be good performers and live performers as well, right? So it doesn't mean as much anymore to just have a hit record. You need to be able to back it up if you want to make money in this business. You have to be able to put on a concert and entertain people. That's sort of, but for a band like ourselves, we never were on recoup, so we never made money from our record sales. Regardless, right? So when the market money for the record sales away, it didn't affect our band one bit. It affected the industry, but we still made our money and did our thing and had our fun. Based on what we do as a band, which is play music live, you know.
Right.
So really, it didn't. If anything, it made it easier for us to make music, and it made it easier for us to sort of take back the full artistic control of the band and stuff, you know. So it's cool because, I mean, really, when you sign to a label, a lot of times those guys, they're doing what's best for their label, but also including your band. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they're not necessarily doing what's best for your band, and you as a band are hopefully doing what's best for your band. So it's, now it sort of took the power back a bit from the from the labels, you know.
Right.
But I don't know. It's weird. It's like I said. It's so new that it's hard to tell if it's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, it took like music pretty much used to get diluted through a few people, tastemakers, and then put out to the public, and that's not necessarily a good way either. You know, but now I sort of miss those people doing that unseen job because there's so much music that it's hard to filter through it all. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's interesting, but I think ultimately this time period of music is and the internet and the changes everything that happened, it's going to end up being down the road looked at as a good thing because really it's clearing the waters. It's clearing everybody out who basically all the posers that were here just for a quick buck or a get rich quick scheme or to meet some girls or, you know, they're gone because it's too hard to just do it for that reason anymore.
Yeah.
You got to do it because you love it now. And that's good. I think will eventually strengthen the music as an overall art form. So.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing the boy band stuck to pop and didn't try to cross over into rock, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They always did, though. You know, those pop artists, they always have, like, their rock song, you know, their rock record or something, you know, and they come out and they bought a leather jacket and they put some stuff in their hair. And it's like that's neat that the way we live our lives is sort of like a pop reference to a lot of people, mm-hmm. you know? Strange.
Talking about all that music out there, like you said, being overwhelming. What are you listening to right now?
You know what? My favorite band right now is a band called King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. And I know that name is ridiculous, and I know it seems like just it can't be good, but that is one of the coolest bands I've heard in a long time. King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Okay.
I swear, it's like... I don't know what they have many, many albums and it's rock, but then it goes all over the place. And it's really cool. There, believe it or not, the best record is called Microtonal Electric Banana. So Microtonal Electric Banana by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard is my favorite record right now.
Influential album in your life, the one that made the switch go off.
I would say, two of them, The Wall and Electric Ladyland by Jimi Hendrix. Electric Ladyland was like the one for me. It still is, to be honest. My favorite record I've ever, ever, ever. I could put it on forever. And then as time goes on, there's others like Tool, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, Anima changed our lives completely. Rage Against the Machine, that record. Probably as a band, the most influential record was the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Blood Sugar Sex Magik. Because that record came out when we, right the summer that we started to be a band. So we learned how to be a band by learning that album.
Uh-huh. You know? Sir Psycho Sexy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they were that perfect blend of hard and fun, you know, and I've probably modeled ourselves a bit after for our entire career. And it's like you can be a rock band, but you don't have to be angry all the time, you know?
True.
So, you know, that's sort of the way we've sort of gone with it, you know?
Yeah, if it's not fun, it's not worth doing, right?
Yeah, I think so, man. I mean, I you know, obviously people go through phases in life, and I'm not saying I'm not going to go through those phases in my life where I'm angry, but at a certain point, it's hard to be angry when you're playing music with your friends. You know what I mean? Like, if I was in a band with strangers, I would maybe be pretty pissed off all the time. You know what I mean? But these are my friends. I look forward to hanging out. So when we're on stage, there's a genuine excitement. When we make music, there's a genuine level of fun that comes with it. So, yeah. And again, like I said, like the Chili Peppers, that Blood Sugar Sex Magik was a massively important record for us. So.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's turn our attention to your work. What's your favorite Finger 11 album and song?
You know what? It's funny. We're very proud of it all. As a canon of work, like we, you know, I think when we made the Butt Monkey record, we rushed. That was the first 12 songs we ever wrote. We put it on a record. We put it out there. And I think it was a bit of an afterthought of like, oh, maybe we should take our time a bit more and pay attention a bit more to detail, you know? And then, so when we started Finger 11, we sort of made a goal to be like, we're never putting a song on a record that we don't all collectively 100% get behind, you know? So that's why it takes us so long to make records, because it takes us a long time for everybody to be happy with a song, you know? So
is it that it takes you guys long? I mean, you seem to be pretty reliable in a sense that you guys are on a pretty regimented route scheme, whether it's by design or not. But it's like, you know, you pretty much count like every 3 years, give or take, you guys are good for an album.
Yeah, and that is true. Like, that's how our cycle works, but that's not by design. And there's a lot of people around us wishing it was fucking a lot quicker. You know what I mean? So but to us, that's just a natural, like, it's like anything. We if you have the luxury of time when you're creating something, you should take it, because you just never know. The inspiration comes in so many ways, so many different, and things can change on a dime when you're making music, like a whole song, a tempo change or whatever. You know, the song we did with Arnold Lanny, we were tuning it down, and we recorded all the bed tracks in G. Scott sang it once, and we're like, and we re-recorded the whole song again, the half step down again. Like, so you just like, I don't know. Anyway, so what I'm saying is, back to your original question about my favorite song right now is off the last record. It's called Come on Oblivion. It's a song I feel like the band's been trying to write for like years, and we finally wrote it. You know, it's an 11-minute song. heavily influenced by Pink Floyd and Tool and Genesis, and like, it's something that we have never put on any of our other records. And I feel like when I listen to it, it's sort of what I like about music. So that song is one of my favorites. But as an album, I still think Greatest of Blue Skies is probably like my favorite, like, solid piece of from beginning to end album that I'm very, very, very proud of. So.
Okay, here, this one, maybe this is just a personal opinion, because we see all the, you know, the news stories, the clippings, we get all the social media interactive with people that listen to us and other stations, but do you have any thoughts on why Canadian artists, aside from maybe, say, you know, the Tragically Hip, really have a tough time being received in their home and native land? I mean, everybody loves to shit on Nickelback. Danko Jones just seems to have quite a following in Europe, but they're kind of fringe here. And it just seems like, you know, for whatever reason, we just don't like our own stuff.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's like, maybe it's like that weird, like, passive aggressive jealousy kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I don't know. You're right. Like, there is a sort of a disdain for our own artists, unless they're like national treasures, right? Like you said, like the Hip or Neil Young, or, you know, but even like
Celine.
Yeah, but even Celine Dion, like, she was hated. Like, she's like, you know, the most popular singer outside of Canada.
Yeah.
And then everybody hated Canada. Hated. I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't know, but it's a funny phenomenon. But there, you know, that being said, there still is an incredible rock scene.
Yes, you're right.
In Canada compared to other countries, you know, like, there's, I wonder if it's because when you leave and get popular and then you come back, they're like, why'd you leave? You know, it's like,
well, there's this whole world out there that said,
we're not good enough for you. You know, I don't know. But it definitely is. It's a thing. But, you know, we, like, for us on our first on Tip, when we released that record in Canada, and it got dropped within 6 weeks. And part of that was because the label we were on got bought out by a bigger company. But Canadian Radio has told us, Nothing on Tip will ever be played on radio because it's too heavy. And at that time, it was too heavy. So we went to the States and got it played on the radio down there. And without a label in Canada, all the stations started adding it because it got the top 10 down there in the States, right?
Uh-huh.
And it was an amazing feeling to come back. And it was like, it was almost like, you still don't like us, but you have to play us in this neat sense. And we ended up, a lot of those instant, like, sort of like, this will never work, it melted, and now so we have very good friendships with a lot of those people who told us in the beginning, like, this will never get on the radio. And then, you know, fast forward 20 years later, and it's like, we're all...
Yeah, well, that's the you know? The fickleness of the Canadian radio industry, right? Like, you, yeah, as a jock or even a music director, personally will like it,
yeah,
and then you test it, and it's just not received by the sheep.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, man. I remember the first time I ever, the bubble got burst where I did it. Like, I grew up loving WKRP in Cincinnati. Like, yeah, there's a massive part of my life where that is heavily influenced by the cast and comedy of WKRP in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And I just, it was the glory, like, the DJ booth, everything about it was so magical. And I remember the first time I met a DJ and found out that you guys weren't allowed to spin your favorite songs. it was like, what? It was like finding out that bands don't all live in the same house together, you know? It's like I thought it was like a magical land, you know? And it's amazing how it changed, you know? But then if you go back, actually just watched WKRP Cincinnati again, and they actually deal with it on that in the 70s. They dealt with, like, program lists and having to play certain songs they didn't want to play, you know?
Okay, Rick, you're the first artist and musician that I've had a chance to speak to since the passing of Chris Cornell and Chester Bennington. As a musician, how did that grab you?
Oh, it's pretty crazy, man. Pretty, like, just surprising. Both of them, very surprising. Like, just, like, obviously, I think maybe a lot of the surprise comes from, I think we've sort of started to accept our artists, like, depression as, like, of course you're depressed. You're an artist. Like, of course you're crazy. You're an artist. But no one takes it seriously. Oh, as a human being, mm-hmm. you're living with craziness and depression. You know what I mean? So when you're not on stage and when you're not on a poster on some kid's wall, you're living in a room somewhere with the people around you being depressed and crazy. And I think we forget that. We take, there's so many cases of it now that when, and so no one, I mean, you will go back and watch that guy's interviews, man. He's begging for help. Chester Bennington, mm-hmm. you know, he was talking openly in interviews about how scary he is to be in his own brain by himself. And everybody's like, whoa, cool story, bro. You know, it's like, no, man, get this guy to hospital. Like, you know, he should be committed if that's how he's thinking, you know? And that's the scary truth of it, is nowadays with the social media stuff, a lot of it's playing out right before our eyes. And again, we're sort of preconditioned or desensitized to the point where most of us aren't even paying attention, you know, to like what's happening to these people. So it's incredibly sad. It's extremely sad because they have families as well. You know, you just don't want anybody to ever think that that's the only solution. You know? And it's scary. I was fortunate enough to hang with Chester a bunch when we were making our self-titled record. When we were mixing it, they were making their second record. And, you know, we both enjoy smoking stuff. So we were hanging out. Yeah. You know, we were hanging out quite a bit every day. Got to know each other over the week pretty good, and you know, he's a good guy, man. He's a really artistic, smart guy that just, you know, last guy I would have imagined. But Chris Cornell one surprised me even more, though, to be honest. Yeah. That was sort of like, what? That seemed like out of the blue. I'm not sure.
Well, you're waiting for it to go, yeah, haha, the internet got you again. It's kind of fake news kind of thing.
The weird one to me was, it wasn't a suicide, but when Prince died and everybody was like, no, Prince wasn't on drugs. Really? Prince was on drugs? I was like, what? I'm surprised that Prince was on drugs. Like, you know what I mean? He named himself a symbol. Like, you know, it's like, of course he was. Like, and I don't know. It's just like, but again, you know, the drug use as well, like that stuff, like that's, it's really just an attempt to self-medicate, probably mm-hmm. the same issue, you know what I mean? So it's like, but I mean, hey, man, it's, rock musicians aren't the first artists to deal with this, you know. If you look back through history, most of the crazy out there thinkers were alcoholics and drug users, and most of them didn't live very long lives, you know. It's usually part of the deal you made with the devil, I guess, you know.
On the internet there, I saw a photo of you and Barry Stock from 3 Days Grace.
Yeah.
You know, you guys could probably form a ZZ Top tribute act if this whole Finger 11 thing doesn't pan out for you.
That would be badass, actually. Yeah, you know what? I've become very good friends, and I'm part of him and his wife has a Mean Beard Oils, and they've got this cool team called like the Mean Beard Team, and they go to beard expos, and they have a young guy, Zach, I'm pretty sure his name is, that they sponsor, and he goes around the world into these beard competitions and stuff, and it's this whole world, this whole little beard world that they invited me into. So I'm part of I'm an ambassador for their product. So we talk quite a bit, and I love those guys. We just saw them the other day in the airport. They're such good. They just were finished up their new record. So
is it Mean Clothing as well? Oh yeah, okay, there it is.
Yeah. Mean Clothing, and then the Mean Beard Oils is what I sort of have become a part of. So
well, hey, I'm a beardo too, man. I'm rocking a nice fresh one. So
you know, I can genuinely tell you these oils are pretty awesome, man. They smell good. They make you. I never ever used oils before these, and I was like, oh, this is
All right. I'm going to have to give that a looky-loo now because I am definitely all about supporting Canadians, seeing as how I am a Canada Day baby.
Yeah. There, oh, no way. That's awesome. You know what my birthday is? 420. That's weird, man.
It was predetermined that you would one day.
Yeah, it was pretty much it, you know.
So then what do you think about the move that's going to be happening next July?
Oh, I can't wait, man. It's the best ever. I can't wait. It's going to be, if it actually happens, it's going to be awesome for the country and for just, I don't know, for everybody.
And, of course, I see this story today, speaking of the legalization of marijuana. Of course, federal government is moving to legalize it. The Ontario government is looking to open storefronts of their own to manage the sale and distribution.
Yeah, that's right. LCBO, right? They're going to open, like, 15 stores or something like that, or a bunch of stores. Yeah,
I don't know.
That's pretty odd. It's, you know what? It'll be amazing when you think, you know, I just had a kid. You know, he's young. He's just over one. And by the time he's old enough to know anything about anything, it won't even be to tell him it was illegal. He'll be like, what?
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's like, you know, and I'm glad, man. It's a sign of a society evolving. It's good, man. I'm glad that people are just using logic and common sense. And
science and education.
Yeah, you know, absolutely, man. And so, and you know, ultimately, if you're a believer in it, then it's just a better option for a lot of medicines. So it should be good. I think it's a good thing. I really do.